know it is, but you know, that's the important thing, and it's, you know, it's cumulative. You, Christine. Dozen nights in our program. Now, did you get into things like Operation Paul? Well, that's great. You know, I'm sure most of the people out there are on our side. They just don't know it. That's the thing. They've never heard the things that you were saying. The thing is, we have a worldview, and when someone challenges that worldview, we get very angry. I had a woman write to me the other day because I said the three wise men didn't get to Bethlehem until Jesus was a year old or so. Why? She said, that, how can you possibly say that? I mean, I always believed everything you said before. You know, she has never read the book of Matthew, you know, that. What can you say? Anyway, hang on. We'll be with you in just a minute here. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, if you'd like to call in later in the program, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, because we have with us this evening our special friend Joel Skousen, and he usually has so much to say that calls many times will detract from the message, and only when we've said what needs to be said will we open for your input on what's being said. Joel, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, tell us a little bit about what's coming up in the latest issues of World Affairs Brief for our listeners out there. Joel Skousen is the publisher of World Affairs Brief, a weekly email publication, which you can get, of course, in hard copy. But he analyzes what's really going on and from an intelligent point of view. And I find his writings to be provocative and insightful. So please pick up the story.
Well, my World Affairs Brief just came out a few hours ago. It always comes out on Friday, and the lead story was I gave a analysis of the Bush record after 3 years, that it's getting worse rather than better. You know, if conservatives think about it, about what we would truly expect out of a conservative administration who has control over both houses of Congress, we would expect them to create havoc among the opposition in its effort to undo the historic evils of the entrenched bureaucracy and big government and all of those things. We would expect them to be replacing old leftists at the State Department and extremist environmentalists entrenched in the Forest Service, the BLM, and the EPA. We'd expect them to be rooting out dark side agents out of the CIA, FBI, DEA, and INS who've been hiding U.S. involvement in drugs and underworld criminal protection. you know, we'd be expecting them to eliminate the Clinton cronies that infested the federal prosecutor's offices and higher-ups in the Justice Department. We'd expect them to be reining in the IRS, stopping it from using tax audits as a tool to persecute, you know, the government's perceived enemies. But I haven't heard any howls of protest from any of these agencies. Have you?
I certainly haven't.
In other words, there haven't been any purges whatsoever. The White House has never cleaned, the Bush White House has never cleaned house. It simply has added tens of neoconservative liberals to the Pentagon and the West Wing. And leftist sympathizers, spies, socialist camp followers, all of those who continue to prosper under this administration in all of our most sensitive branches of government.
So, well, of course, what you're suggesting is that perhaps we really don't have a conservative Christian administration, as we're being told, or as the media would like us to believe, but we're just getting more of the same programs that brought us to the tragic state where we are today.
Precisely. You know, this is a fraud. What I'm saying is that they used to have an excuse for not carrying out the conservative agenda because they didn't control Congress. It's just not an excuse anymore. In fact, everything, all of the bad news is coming out of this administration. And Congress is simply being a rubber stamp to these things. Look at the amnesty bill that we talked about last week. This is a massive violation of all of the principles of U.S. sovereignty, the Constitution, protecting our borders, protecting America, obeying the law, the rule of law, not rewarding people for, you know, being illegal aliens. And yet, there's no public constituency for this. 70 to 80% of Americans are against giving any amnesty. They want illegal aliens deported. And yet, here the Bush administration, and unfortunately, I'm sad to say, most of the congressional delegation from Utah is what ends up carrying water for the administration and sponsoring these bills. My own representative, Representative Chris Cannon, is sponsoring in the House the Bush guest worker program.
But isn't a lot of this, Joel, simply because they're not going to get the money to run for re-election. They're not going to get the good appointments to positions in Congress. They're not going to get all the perks that bring them power and profit unless they do compromise their principles to go along with what the administration wants.
Precisely. These people are weak people. They want to be idolized by, you know, Republican general constituency. They don't want to take a stand that would be controversial, and even though Chris Cannon is a multimillionaire, could fund his own campaign, he wants to be liked by the establishment. He wants to go up the ladder.
If you are a Republican congressman and you fight the system, you don't go along with the top, and you actually represent your constituents, they'll come after you. They'll go after you. They'll do everything they can to demonize and ridicule using the media. In fact, with the full and active support of the media, attacking any congressman who tries to tell the truth or do the right thing.
That's right. You know, let's look at the record. I'm giving a midterm or post-midterm report card to Bush. The FAA continues to harass and block airline pilots from becoming armed in the cockpit as provided by law. Now, you wouldn't expect a really conservative administration who claims to be pro-Second Amendment to be fighting this tooth and nail.
Or an administration that really believed that there was a threat of terrorists hijacking our planes without the active or at least tacit consent of people within the administration. Yeah. In other words, if there's really a threat of terrorism in America and of terrorists hijacking our planes, the most logical thing would be to have our pilots armed, and the administration has done everything they can to thwart the will of the people, to thwart the will of our elected representatives, to thwart the law, and by so doing, carry out their program, which is to keep the pilots disarmed so that the people will, of course, if there were to be a hijacking, would be subject to death.
You know, what's interesting is that there isn't any reason to go against pilots being armed, even if you're an anti-gun person. Anti-gun people are not against policemen carrying guns, not against regulated individuals carrying guns. They're just against the public carrying guns, which, you know, we obviously oppose. We want the public to be armed to defend themselves. So, you know, there isn't even an anti-gun lobby that's pushing this. This has to be a larger globalist agenda. This has to be an undermining American sovereignty agenda. And how does that relate? It's simply that if Americans don't have the ways to protect themselves, and they don't have pilots protecting them, that means they have to depend on government strong-handed, intrusive motives to protect them, which doesn't protect us, actually. It simply harasses and provides...
And I think your point is so well made, Joel, because the thing is, the American people must understand that there is an agenda behind everything else that's going on. I mean, there's what we see, what we're told, but behind that is an entirely different agenda that the average American has no glimpse of or no knowledge of. A case in point might be this illegal alien issue that you brought up. But, you know, for many years, members of the Senate tried to have English-only language. We wanted to have something to unite us as a nation, and that would be a common language. And they were constantly thwarted. Every time they tried to do it, powerful forces blocked having a constitutional amendment or a law saying English would be the official language of America.
Because and it wasn't really the Mexicans.
Right.
It wasn't the Mexicans. They wanted children to learn English. Right. It was the liberal establishment people that didn't want it. And that's because they have a multicultural agenda. I mean, look at the INS. The Bush administration claims that after this guest worker program is enforced, that the INS will vigorously enforce the law and deport people who don't qualify. Yet the INS has never enforced the law even right now. If our police catch someone, applying for a license as an illegal alien, do you think they deport them? They can't even call the INS to come and pick them up. They refuse to come and pick them up. Only white European aliens are vigorously pursued and deported by the INS. Now that tells you something.
And, of course, really, there is always an agenda behind what's going on, and the American people are not to understand that they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us to understand what they're doing. And so much of what goes on appears to be illogical. It's only illogical if you're looking at it from a logical point of view. If you're looking at it from a globalist point of view, where you want a multicultural society, you want to erode the fabric of our constitutional republic and replace it with an authoritarian socialist or so-called democratic socialist society, and then you do exactly what they're doing today.
And that's why conflict, managed conflict, is so important to their goals. That's why multiculturalism is not so that you get to know other cultures. I'm as culturally accustomed as anybody. I've lived in a lot of foreign countries, speak multiple foreign languages, have many friends in different cultures, and many Latin American friends. And yet, I know that when you start getting major cultural minority splits within a society, like in Kosovo, in Bosnia, in many of the Middle Eastern countries, you cannot have peace, especially with a socialist-oriented social democracy, because everybody's trying to get control of the big socialist pie, the pie, and divide up the rewards of the productive class. And it's constant warfare. It's constant conflict. And they're creating that kind of managed conflict by what I call nickel and diming us to death with delays over implementing this kind of security policy in the United States. They're going to keep promising us that they're going to close the border, promising us that the next time around that they'll be serious about deporting people, and yet it simply puts people to sleep for another 3 years waiting for those promises to come through, and they never will. In fact, eventually we'll have a Hispanic near majority, and no politician will be able to get elected by going up against that and reestablishing the status quo.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's really so fascinating as you see this whole incredible scenario unfold, and you're absolutely right. I mean, Congress has repeatedly passed legislation that would have strengthened our borders and closed our borders, and the INS absolutely refused to enact or to carry out the laws that they were ordered to carry out and that were funded. Why? Because they didn't want a solution, they wanted a problem, a managed conflict. That's what it's about. I think you put that so clearly. I hope our listeners understand the implications of what you're saying. They've never wanted to solve the problem. They wanted to use the problem to change America.
And what's telling is that when you have individual INS agents at the low enforcement level who want to enforce, or the DE agents who want to open up these sealed trucks that are being allowed to come over the border that sets off the drug-sniffing dogs like wild, if the higher-ups in the office that say, no, we don't want to do that, and don't rock the boat, and, you know, put them on under great pressure not to be a whistleblower, it's the higher-ups. And when they appeal above those managers up into the Washington, D.C. level, the pressure even gets higher to conform. In other words, this is a top-down-driven corruption system. There's an agenda that the people at the top especially know middle and lower level managers also know there's a pressure system, even though they may not be part of it, but they're interested in maintaining the job, and so they continue to harass and put down the individual sincere agents, whether they're FBI, DEA, or INS, who are trying to do their job. And so my words are not meant to discredit those good, honest, patriotic people who are frustrated. It's the higher-ups who are the ones that are carrying water for this globalist agenda.
And the reason that they're high-ups is because they do carry the water for the globalist agenda. I think that's what's so important.
Yes. You know, and another issue, we would expect, above all, a conservative administration, a Christian administration, to get a hold of this IRS and keep them from harassing small taxpayers while letting the big fish like Enron go scot-free. For all the hue and cry over the Enron accounting scandals, do you know, Dr. Stan, there was virtually no audit of Enron's 800-plus offshore tax shelters? Now, if you or I had one offshore tax shelter, we would be guaranteed an audit. And they had over 800 and were never audited. Now, the IRS this week, instead of being worried about that, issues Revenue Ruling 2004-6, creating a broad new set of ambiguous standards which special interest groups like anyone who's tax-exempt, like Gun Owners of America or Conservative Caucus or other really strong groups, they must follow or risk losing all or part of their tax-exempt status. This goes beyond the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform, which essentially the Supreme Court shamedly upheld this month, restricting any ads within 60 days of an election that would criticize a particular candidate for a position they're taking on an issue, even if you're not directly supporting that candidate. What this IRS ruling does is expand that to even print media, to newsletters, to alerts by email from such things like Gun Owners of America. They cannot blow the whistle on anybody's wrongdoing 60 days prior to election, or they lose their tax-exempt status, and this is a very egregious thing. And it's coming right out of our own conservative, quote, Bush administration.
But you know, the thing that's really so disturbing is that the Democratic administration never could have gotten these things through. It is because there is no opposition. There is no Republican opposition or conservative opposition. The conservatives are backing the president, and the liberals are backing him, too, because he's doing exactly what they want, whether it be the Kennedy No Child Left Behind bill or the Medicare payment for drugs or all of these incredible programs that they're coming up with would lighten the heart of any Democrat out there. So they're backing them, but there is no opposition. We'd be far better off if Al Gore were the president of the United States today.
Well, what's interesting is that Rush Limbaugh and bending himself into a pretzel trying to justify the administration's latest proposal on amnesty was saying, you know, this is brilliant. He's taking away all the issues from the Democrats. He's going to make the Democratic Party irrelevant in the United States.
That's absolutely right, because why do you want to vote for Democrats and vote for the Republicans and you get all the Democratic programs in?
I mean, that's like saying, you got a criminal in your house, and I'm going to solve the problem by giving him all my money, and then he won't want any more. Or I'm going to kill myself so that a murderer won't have to do it. That solves the problem, doesn't it?
Well, of course, Rush Limbaugh is a brilliant individual. I think he is a consummate actor. I think he has a very concise mind. I think he's the finest conservative that the establishment's money can buy.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, we're really having some problems, I think, and getting worse and worse with this Homeland Security. Everyone has heard about the heirs of the Christmas Day flights that were canceled. Homeland Security, using their very tenuous and dubious watch list, waved the red flag on about six passengers that were scheduled to come to L.A. from Paris, France, forced Air France to cancel those flights because they had passengers that had similar names to those on the terrorist list. One turned out to be a grandmother. The other turned out to be a three-year-old child. And now the United States is going to put, Homeland Security is going to put a red, yellow, green passenger coding system and implant that upon us. If you're on a yellow, that means you get special searching. If you're on a red, you simply cannot get on the plane. And there is no procedure for finding out if that is, in fact, you on the list instead of somebody else with a sound-alike name, how to get off the list, what the evidence is justifying it. It's all top secret. You have no rights. This is something that Pastor Chuck Baldwin says, you know, this is really scary. He said, this administration is full of a bunch of control freaks who are attempting to turn America into a police state. Well, I say yes and no, not because they are control freaks. The better explanation is this administration is controlled by globalists who must incrementally undermine U.S. constitutional protections in order to merge the U.S. into their evil New World Order. That's the real control system. It's the globalist system. You don't have just a bunch of people wanting to control people in this administration. They're simply following orders, and they may not even understand why they're doing this to people. Oh, I suppose it's all too easy when you're in law enforcement or security to say yes and nod your head to the terrorist threat. I mean, who's going to go up against your boss and say, hey, I'm not sure we really have terrorism? They'll throw you out of your job. Well, most of these people are simply nodding their head and being yes men. But I'll tell you, the people designing these programs are meant to accustom Americans to martial law type controls.
And I think the most incredible thing, if there really is a terrorist threat, as you pointed out, why haven't there been any terrorist attack in America for over 2 years? If there really is a terrorist attack in America, why is the administration blocking efforts to try to arm our pilots to have guards or marshals on every flight? Why is it we're just getting around now to actually trying to find means of deflecting surface-to-air missiles that might be fired at our planes? We're just getting around now to checking the cargo on the planes, that are passenger planes, to make sure it doesn't contain explosives. Why has the government been under-concerned about this? Or maybe they're really not as concerned about the threat of terrorism as they are in taking away our freedom. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen as we go through World Affairs Brief and begin looking at what's going on behind the scenes. Because remember, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Joel Skousen. Joel, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, Stan, there's more bad news coming out of the Bush administration in terms of restricting our rights. We've talked about the latest in Homeland Security. President Bush can't seem to keep from giving everybody what they perceive they want in order to, I mean, this is a very socialist tendency. A week after pledging to cut the budget deficit by half, President Bush unleashes another pie-in-the-sky boondoggle by announcing two new expensive space projects, a space station on the moon and manned flight to Mars. Are these essential in a time of severe economic crisis and continual warfare? I mean, Bush deceitfully projects the cost of these projects to be a mere $12 billion. Who is he kidding? Even NASA is shocked at the understatement of cost. This is like the old IRS scheme, is that we're going to start with a 1% income tax, or the Social Security thing with a 1% payroll tax, and they know that it will incrementally go up there. Once it starts, who's going to say no to the Medicare or prescription drug plan and Medicaid? Who's going to say no to the space program once it's half built and people are up on a space station in Mars? Who's going to say, call them home from this worthless joint U.S.-Russian space station orbiting the country now? They know that once the foot is in the door, no one's going to say no. But this is very, very disturbing.
Yes, I am very disturbed as well. First of all, we don't have the money. They're already talking about a deficit, a federal deficit for this year, 2004, of at least a half a trillion, and in reality, it'll probably be closer to $1 trillion. So when he talks about a space station on Mars or a space station on the moon and sending a man to Mars, what he's really talking about is borrowing from our great-great-great-grandchildren, either that or destroying the value of the dollar so they don't have to pay the money back. But why, when you have the greatest deficits in all recorded history, would you come up with a boondoggle that will have absolutely nothing to do with what's going here on Earth?
It's totally unnecessary, frankly.
Right.
We've done a lot of exploration. They've created a lot of new technology things. We've got plenty for our needs at this time. I just don't see the need.
Now, do you ever stop to think that maybe they keep our attention focused on the moon so we don't see what they're doing here on Earth?
there certainly has to be something to that diversionary theory. Clinton was an expert at diverting public attention from its own sins and problems, and Bush seems to be doing much of the same thing. Although I still think, you know, there is a major globalist agenda underlying it all, and we're simply moving rapidly toward that.
No, well, you know, the other thing, interestingly, after having heard Paul O'Neill and read some of the things he said, and Paul O'Neill, the former Secretary of the Treasury, it's quite obvious that Bush really has very little control over anything. And, you know, in fact, O'Neill's remark about a blind man sitting in a room of deaf people, that there was no communication, that whenever Bush would say something he wanted to do, it'd be countered by Karl Rove or Dick Cheney, and they would simply insist that he would take positions that were, you know, totally untenable. And
you know,
suddenly have a feeling that...
And the president doesn't argue with him either.
Right. That the president, George Bush, is not running things in Washington, D.C. at all. And I think it's so vitally important that we'll be doing a number of interviews on this latest book. I think, what is it, the cost of loyalty or something of the sort.
You know, one of the major issues, though, that I want to talk about tonight is the fact that the courts are now quickly moving to a major forefront, to restricting liberty. The most serious betrayals of liberty have come this week, in the past week, from the Supreme Court.
Hold that thought for just a moment.
All right.
Bring our listeners. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Joel Skousen. And Joel is commenting about the restriction of liberty by the courts here in this country. And when the courts become corrupt, as it was in 1 Samuel, the chapter 8, or the, pardon me, the 8th chapter of 1 Samuel, why you begin to see this is the basis where freedom is lost. So what happened this week that was so significant about the courts?
Well, what was really... sad to see was the Supreme Court upheld a couple of several issues, frankly, and even lower courts are getting to the act. But the major issue, of course, was the Supreme Court agreeing with the federal government that they had the right to keep secret all of the arrests and the procedures for the 700 to 900 people who were taken in the dragnet after 9/11. Who have never been revealed, the names have never been revealed to the American public or to the judicial system. The court said that, the judiciary owes some measure of deference to the executive in cases implicating national security. And as commentator Matthew Rothschild, unfortunately, of the left, writing in The Progressive, wrote, we depend a lot on the left now to have some of the most open criticism of the president simply because the right simply chooses to be blind. But he says, I don't know where in the Constitution those judges found the concept of deference, but this goes a way beyond deference. This is a blank check to let the administration do just about whatever it wants under the cloak of national security. Why can't we know the names of the thousands of people that the American administration has rounded up? Why can't we see the charges they are detained on? There are no charges, by the way. The whole idea that the president can set up a separate system of justice all by himself and not let the public know what's going on should be anathema to anyone who cherishes civil liberties in this country. The case promotes, he said, a chilling warning that under George Bush and John Ashcroft, those civil liberties are in grave peril, and don't count on the Supreme Court to restrain Bush or Ashcroft from their oppressive ways. I have to say, amen, he's right on. Those two people are really moving rapidly to set up a star chamber type of justice system of which once you go into the bowels of that system, there is no coming out, there is no habeas corpus. And we look the other way right now because these are supposedly non-citizens. But look at the hypocrisy of that position. The Supreme Court and lower federal courts have ruled numerous times relative to the California issue when Proposition 189 came or 187 came along denying illegal aliens welfare and public schooling benefits, know that all persons in the United States have the fundamental rights of any other citizen, and we shall not in law exclude them from having access to the fundamental rights. And yet, we have just now seen the Supreme Court deny them the most fundamental rights, that is, the ones about civil liberties relative to criminal prosecution.
But, of course, Joel, the explanation for that, the justification is we don't want Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda to find out who these people are that we're holding. we don't want Osama bin Laden.
As if they don't know.
That is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Of course they know what it is. No, we don't want the American people to know who these people are or why we arrested them or the fact that I believe we had thoroughly infiltrated a lot of the Islamic terrorist movement here in America, but we've told the public that we didn't do that, and so we can't let them know how we knew who these people were to arrest, and many of whom are still being held without trial or even the right to a lawyer.
Well, and the Supreme Court also upheld random use of roadblocks by police to catch suspected criminals. Now, what this is going to turn into is that anyone suspected of terrorism then can be used, if there's anyone running loose in the city that's suspected of terrorism, they'll have an excuse to be able to put up random roadblocks. So, goodbye to the Fourth Amendment for unreasonable search and seizure. It's starting with a little easy case where they say that, they were just distributing flyers. But the broad implications of this ruling are much greater given the tradition of under orange alerts and a terrorist alert that they can put up roadblocks anytime going into airports and elsewhere. You know, this is what I worry about in all of this terrorist hoopla and these increased alerts, that we're getting the American people used to being searched on a regular basis for no reason other than because we have simply declared something to be a national emergency. And there is no one requiring that the administration give specific evidence. All they say is chatter on the Internet or there are someone suspected links to Al-Qaeda. No one's requiring them to come up with something specific. And they're shutting down whole portions of the economy in order to justify this kind of intervention.
All right, we're going to be back here right after the break. And, of course, we're going to ask you to hold off your calls until Joel has covered the material he wants to cover. And then, of course, if we have time at the end of the program, we'll certainly open this up to your calls. But please hold your calls for the time being because I want you to get the wisdom that's in the latest World Affairs Brief. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen. And, Joel, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, the last issue of the courts that I want to bring up tonight is that lower federal courts seem to be demonstrating the same kind of propensity to exercise this tightening control agenda that the Supreme Court is. Federal District Court of New York this past week ruled that the public cannot have unrestricted access to the oral histories of public police and firefighters involved in the 9/11 attacks. What's happening is here is that before the oral records, many of these people, gave depositions to what they saw, what they heard, as this 9/11 was coming down. This also refers to the 911 calls, the cell telephone calls that were recorded between police and their firefighters. All of these things got into oral histories. And now the establishment judiciary wants to restrict that, so that all mention of opinions and recommendations of those interviews will be deleted so that the press will only get the interviewer's personal expressions of feelings. In other words, if a firefighter who was interviewed said, "I heard what sounded like explosions before the collapse of World Trade Center number 2. I think it was bombs that took down those towers. It was also horrible." The public will merely get the portion of his transcript that says, "It was also horrible."
And actually, we even have video recordings of these people saying, "We heard the bombs going off," or what we thought was the bombs going off. We've got these articles out of People magazine, and yet the one thing they can't allow is for the American people to hear the truth.
Now, I have been going over the evidence. The evidence of the bombs were involved in the collapse of World Trade Center 1 and 2. And let me say that I have resisted going into this position for a long time because it was originally thought, and most of the people who felt there was a bomb connection to the collapse of the towers were trying to figure out some theory in which they could have the controlled demolition of all the floors collapsing one after another, and of course that's what it looks like is happening. It looks like a controlled demolition, but it's also very close to the standard explanation of the collapse, starting at the damage point and then starting to pancake one floor upon the other. But now new evidence has emerged, now that the seismograph, from about 20 miles away, there was a seismographic station, and their records have been revealed, and it shows a very interesting, huge, sharp spike before the collapse of each of the World Trade Centers. Just seconds before that collapse starts, there's a huge spike that is indicative of an explosive ignition. Now, there's some other evidence that that points how this will happen. Remember,
hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment here. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and rejoining us now are our listeners up there in the Great Northwest, and we're going to be, of course, Joel is talking about the coming down of the buildings, and this is, of course, World Trade Center number one, World Trade Center building number two, and he's pointing out that there was seismographic evidence that has now recently been released of explosions just before each one of those buildings came down, not when they came down, but immediately before. So pick up the story from there.
When you analyze, when experts analyze the kind of seismographic signature that the buildings under pancaking collapse would give, we have a lot of data out there to demonstrate that, because we do a lot of controlled demolition of buildings. And it's a very soft seismic signature. In other words, there's no heavy spikes, because the building starts coming down in portions, and it kind of rumbles to the ground, and when it hits, finally when the majority of weight hits, that's where there's a major seismographic signature. So it's kind of a slow rise to a boom when most of the weight hits the ground, and that shakes the ground. This is not what the seismic signature of World Trade Center 1 and 2 shows. It shows a major boom and then the collapse of the building coming. Now, how can that be explained? The reason why I was initially reluctant to accept the explosive explanation is that it would be almost impossible to prognosticate how they would put charges in all of the floors of those buildings, because they're all finished, they're filled with people day and night. It would be very difficult to get inside there, even maintenance men. And they had all of these pillars. I mean, it would just be a tremendous amount. And then how would you know where the aircraft was going to hit, which ones you would trigger first? It would be a nightmare of demolition in order to do that. But now an explanation theory has surfaced because of the fact that around the 47 pillars, in fact, there's even a core right around the elevator shafts, that there's testimony of the contractor went in to remove the debris, that there are huge pools of molten steel around each one of those pillars. Now, this indicates that some type of thermite explosive charge was put around the pillars, which essentially brings those up to about 8,000 degrees or so, and well above the 2,500 it takes to melt steel.
And so that would be well above the jet fuel, the heat you get
from that. Jet fuel can only reach a temperature, well, generally it's 900 to 1500 degrees, depending on how much oxygen is involved. The government's explanation of the pools of steel, of course, is that jet fuel and debris, papers, and other things came down the elevator shaft, and that it burned so hot that it melted all the pillars next to it. Now, this is not true for a couple of reasons. One, under any conditions, you cannot get above the 12 to 1500 range without hot jets of oxygen. Not only just ambient oxygen, but lots of oxygen, extra oxygen, just powerfully being thrust into the flame system. You can't do that in the bottom of an elevator shaft. That's almost an oxygen starvation type system. You wouldn't have achieved anything more than a smolder down there. So this is real strong evidence, Stan, that there were charges. And incidentally, this would be a scenario that could be much easier explained in terms of the collapse. If you suddenly removed the major support pillars, then, of course, the weakened portion where the airplane hit would immediately start to pancake, and that's exactly what it looks like it happened. In other words, it starts down. In other words, if the columns fell, the 47 interior columns fell, the outside shell that had not been structurally damaged by the aircraft would stay intact, because there are 130 35 other smaller pillars around that would hold that structure up. But of course, it would bring down the central core, which would destabilize the top portion of the building that was not being supported by the perimeter anymore because it had been damaged by the aircraft coming in, was supported by the central core. So bringing down that central core now brings down the upper half, and that begins to pancake the rest. So I think it does give a logical, theoretical explanation for the sudden collapse of the buildings, even though they were designed to withstand and were withstanding the shock of these airplanes hitting the outer structure.
Well, that's really a frightening thing to contemplate. Of course, I've sort of avoided the subject as you have for fear of being labeled as an extremist, but the one question that nobody wants to address is, why did Building 7 come down? It wasn't hit by an aircraft. In fact, we don't even know how they got a fire on one of the upper floors where there was supposedly some diesel that was stored. But this building came down from the very base, just like a controlled explosion.
Yes, in fact, the demolition people have also testified that there were molten pools of steel on the structural members at the bottom of WTC-7.
Now, where is this testimony? Where can anybody get this, Joel?
If I can bring up the...
You don't have to. I thought you might have just at your fingertips.
Well, I've got it probably 10 seconds away at my fingertips.
All right, fine.
I can find the testimony here if I can give...
Well, I think for our listeners, you have to understand, I know Joel well enough to know that when he makes a statement, he's got something to back it up. Just as if you hear something that we say, we're going to have sources of information. And this is really what's so vitally important. Most of what you hear on talk radio is simply, it's either somebody's opinion or it's frank CIA disinformation to confuse you or to create so much different conflicting facts you don't know what to think. But Joel ordinarily has access to information. He spends a great deal of time researching it, and that's why we love to have him here as a guest. Did you find that source?
Yes, I did. This testimony comes from the president of Tully Construction of Flushing, New York. His name is Peter Tully, and he was the one who initially reported there are literally molten steel at the bottom of the World Trade Center. He brought in, additionally, Mark Loiseau, which is president of the Controlled Demolition Incorporated. Now, these are the people, CDI of Phoenix, Maryland, who also took down the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. And so these people also must have known that there were pillars blown and cut by explosives in the Murrah Building as well. Here's what Mr. Loiseau said. Hot spots of molten steel in the basements. He said these incredibly hot spots are found at the bottoms of the elevator shaft of main towers, down 7 basement levels. The molten steel was found 3, 4, and 5 weeks later when the rubble was being removed. He said, molten steel was also found at 7 World Trade Center, which mysteriously collapsed in the late afternoon.
And is this on a website or whereabouts?
You can read it in... an article by Christopher Bolin at the American Free Press website, AmericanFreePress.com or AFP.com.
Okay. P.com. Okay, fine. Thank you so very much. Now, before I forget, I want you to get your address and your telephone number out. So hopefully some of our listeners will want to get your publications and subscribe to the World Affairs Brief.
Well, they can... find out most everything about the World Affairs Brief on my website, www.joelskousen.com. That's spelled JoelSkousen. JoelSkousen.com. Covers about my World Affairs Brief, various books that I've written on security and strategic relocation for safety, specifically because of these kinds of things, which I've prognosticated will happen as... liberty is undermined. If people don't have access to the web, they can call my office during business hours, area code 801-224-4746. That's 224-4746, area code 801. There's a print edition of the World Affairs Brief. They can get free samples by simply calling my office and requesting those.
And let me point out, I have utmost faith in the material Joel Skousen puts out, so I recommend his publications very, very strongly. So is there anything else you want to cover as far as the coming down of the buildings? Because the implications of this are really rather frightening, and that may explain why, when the administration had been told by at least 12 separate countries that there was going to be an attack on the United States, that there were no planes in the air that morning, that the missile batteries on the Pentagon had not been activated, which would have stopped the plane from, or whatever did hit the Pentagon from actually hitting it. And, of course, it may explain, indeed, what took place up in Pennsylvania, because I don't think we've ever got the truth about what took place there.
Well, we do know, though, that that airplane in Pennsylvania was shot down. There's just no other way to explain why one of the engines is 8 miles away from the crash site, as well as a hole in the aircraft. One of the cell phone callers said there was an explosion that they heard in the cockpit voice recorder, the one that may have been edited down and presented to the relatives under great reluctance by the government, did have a big rushing wind sound at the end of that recording, which indicates a hole in the side of the fuselage. So there's real strong evidence. There are witnesses to an aircraft firing at the airliner. There are witnesses of another government white beach-type small jet aircraft, a lease jet that the lessee says they leased exclusive to the government. That jet was seen following the aircraft down, circling around the crash site, and then departing at high speed. So there's all kinds of signatures that Flight 93 was shot down.
And, of course, that, in all probability, was a CIA jet. They usually have white jets. And the other
that are unmarked, that's right.
Right. And the other interesting thing is we have a picture that the FBI had on their website of a passport that survived that crash. That's the most incredible story in the world. The FBI actually posted this passport with the names of a picture of one of the so-called hijackers on it.
Now, Muhammad Atta is one, right, claiming it's his passport.
How could they possibly expect, when you've just got a big hole in the ground and everything is burned up, except there's supposedly a Bible that survived, open to a specific page, and then this one passport.
Suicide letters from the hijackers. Their last will and testament. Don't forget those.
Did they survive the crash?
That's what they're claiming.
Well, I think I've always felt that they probably rolled down the window and threw them out before the plane went down. Ladies and gentlemen, this is CIA disinformation. This is how they do it. They plant these things, and then when it becomes so ridiculous that they finally have to, of course, to take them down off their website and try to get people to forget that they'd ever made these claims. But everything we see about what happened on September 11th shows that they're covering up. They're covering up. And, of course, the only question is, why would they cover up? Well, if they knew the attack was coming and they left 3,000 Americans to die, or they actually took those buildings down themselves, why could the American people accept that? Of course they couldn't accept that. They'd rise up and they'd overthrow the government in violence. So we've got to keep them confused and keep giving them conflicting stories and conflicting information so that nobody can think effectively about what's going on. But if there was ever any incident that I ever saw that had the hands of the CIA, the bloody hands of the CIA all over it, it is what happened on September 11th.
Well, it's safe to say that the evidence is growing so strongly that, as I said on my coast-to-coast interview with George Norrie, that at best we can say is the government knew this was going to happen and let it happen. But if this evidence turns out to be more and more conclusive about the charges that brought down the World Trade Center, this then, certainly could not have been terrorists. This would have had to have been, real government involvement. And do we have a precedent for this? We certainly do. Oklahoma City, the best evidence now is that there was massive government involvement with using agent provocateurs in the form of Middle Eastern people under their control. And how do we know they were under their control? The fact that they were captured, they were known, John Doe's 1 and 2 after the event, and they were protected, their identities were protected by the FBI. But, there are video shots from local Oklahoma City television stations showing bomb squads disarming the other bombs around the building. There, of course, is the evidence of the pillars being removed by point charges. Timothy McVeigh's van was not the only explosive charge there. This was a very team insider effort.
Of course, I know, I'm sure you probably have seen some of these documentaries they put on television, but they have this book that was supposedly written by Timothy McVeigh along with this reporter. And Timothy McVeigh describes, he's driving through the streets of Oklahoma City, and of course, they have this massive bomb there. And so he has two fuses. One is the 5-minute fuse, and the other is a 2-minute fuse. So he's driving along. When he's 5 minutes from the Murrah Building, he lights the 5-minute fuse. When he's at the stoplight, half, three-quarters of a block away from the Murrah Building, he lights the second fuse. Now, how does he know that there's going to be a parking place for him in front of the building? I mean, what happens if he arrives there and there's no parking place for him? Then what does he do? But the die is already cast. So, then we're supposed to believe he drives up, he pulls in, he parks, he gets out of the car, and then he slowly walks away, about 6 blocks to where his car is parked. I mean, and then, of course, comes the explosion. I mean, but anybody who honestly believes that actually blew up that building using this very sophisticated bomb with a fuse that you'd light. I mean, how would you set that thing off? You were going to say,
remotely with charges. That's correct.
But they must think the American people are terribly gullible.
I hadn't heard that one before.
That comes from the book that supposedly Timothy McVeigh had written with these two reporters.
Well, that's a little bit of disinformation. I'm sure he's trying to protect his other sources.
Sure.
And, because we knew that there were other people. But, the mere fact, there's a great parallel between 9/11 and Oklahoma City bombing. The seismic record has been suppressed by the government at Oklahoma City because it shows two distinct explosions. We have the video evidence of the explosion, which would have shown various other evidence. It would have shown Timothy McVeigh and other people walking away from the truck more than just himself. It would have shown John Doe number two. Those video surveillance cameras of the Murrah Building were confiscated by the government and never released. We have video surveillance cameras of the passengers getting on at Boston Logan Airport. Those were confiscated by the FBI and never released to the public. Why wouldn't they want to release them? This would show the actual faces of the hijackers. This would confirm whether or not the 19 that they claimed did the job were in fact there. The mere fact that they're not showing them indicates that they must not be very eager for the American public to see how this thing really happened.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that really puzzles me is that they made such a big issue out of 15 of the 19 people coming from Saudi Arabia.
And now, Afghanistan.
Beg your pardon?
And then attacked Afghanistan.
Right, but even more than that, I mean, why would they do that? Because, as you well know, there's been a number of articles written by very legitimate people pointing out that at least 6 of the hijackers are alive and well, and they either had stolen identity or something else. So if they had stolen identity, why would they keep pointing at Saudi Arabia? Unless, of course, this is to condition the American people for a coming attack on the Saudi Arabians. I really believe that's somewhere in the back of their minds, this is one of the next things that's planned. And of course, Saudi Arabians will have access to nuclear weapons because they financed the Pakistani nuclear weapons. And I think this is all a prelude to the nuclear war that we're going to be fighting over there in the Middle East, and maybe right here in the United States as well.
Well, there is increasing evidence. I'm getting, if I'll use the word chatter, it's actually more specific than that, from my Israeli sources as well as from military sources here. The U.S. has active plans underfoot right now to do small-scale invasions of Syria. So I think that, I don't perceive this as anything akin to what went on in Iraq. I think there's going to be small unit activities. They're going to target terrorist camps. They're going to target, I think there's a good chance that Israel is going to do simultaneous attacks on certain targets of the Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, which is controlled by Syria. And I think that they're going to justify another escalation in the Middle East and continued antagonization of the Islamic people with their plans if these go forward.
And do you think that this is really an intentional effort to inflame more people, get them into this radical Islamic movement in preparation for coming war?
I do. Obviously there is the oil motive, but, you know, oil motive just isn't enough to explain all that they do. Certainly, they do tend to reward insider corporations that are projecting the globalist movement and being yes man to the administration. And yet, nothing can fully be explained, I think, about what this government has been doing, the Clinton administration, the former Bush administration, unless you understand their allegiance to the globalist objective, which is, one, you've got to eventually take out the United States as the main manipulator of world events and allow the United Nations to replace the United States. The only way you do that is to antagonize the world sufficiently that you engender a backlash wherewith Russia, as the still secret ally of all of those that the U.S. is antagonizing, will feel justified in the eyes of the world in attacking preemptively the United States. And I think China will act as their ally. And I think that's the big game plan. Antagonize the world until Russia feels sufficiently justified to launch their attack. And then the U.S. actually wanting this attack, meaning that this will give them the final excuse to, as a wounded nation, as a nation that can't get back on its own, will have to say to Americans, give your allegiance to the United Nations. They will save us from the great evil of communism, which we didn't know was existing. We didn't know that they were fooling us all these years.
You mean that communism really isn't dead?
Well, of course, they'll have to admit the communism dead once it strikes back again, but they will claim that they didn't know that any of this was going to occur. They will claim that Russia deceived them.
Right, and that we never knew that Putin had really been a former leader in the KGB, or that the entire KGB apparatus is still intact, the entire military is under the control of members of the Communist Party. We had no idea.
What were you talking about? Yeah, and that we had claimed we had no idea that Russia was preparing for this attack, but they do. They know about Yamato Mountain. They know about the underground nuclear weapons factories and bunker systems and all of the... I mean, how can we say that they're in compliance with the treaties when they're building chemical and biological and nuclear war, making equipment underground now?
And, of course, we're doing everything we can to help them financially, under one guise or another, always giving them more money. Oh, they just don't have enough money to dismantle their nuclear weapons, so we'll help them. Oh, they don't have enough money to guard their chemical and biological weapons, so we'll give them money for that. And we're building up the best enemy money can buy, and people better understand that. We've got about 4 minutes to go. Were there any other points you wanted to make this evening, Joel?
Yes, I do. I want to talk about the very disturbing reports that we... got a growing number of thugs in our military. And I know this is a very sensitive time to talk about it because people are very reluctant to say anything that might not support our military, but we have to be frank about this. There's more and more stories coming out, not out of our American military, they're very mum on this, but from European and Arab sources about U.S. mistreatment of prisoners, torture, and killing of prisoners. There was, and I don't have time to read all of the egregious examples of this. I'll just mention a few. A 55-year-old man was detained during his home during a raid. They found no weapons. They took him into custody. He ended up having major head trauma, electrocution, other abuses on bruises on his arms. Ended up with having a fatal heart attack and died. Another son was captured. A 19-year-old son of a woman just soon to be married was returning home when their truck broke down. They were confronted by American patrol. They were searched, handcuffed, led 3 kilometers to a nearby dam, and then ordered to jump into the raging waters on the exit of the dam. They drowned.
Now, there was an article actually on the front page of the Wall Street Journal just this last week about a man who had been arrested on very questionable charges, forced to stand for 13 hours till he fell over, beaten, burned with cigarettes, tortured for many months, and then released. And yet, these were Americans that were doing it, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. If these things are being done by our military on foreigners, why would you think they wouldn't use them on Americans here in this country? And if they're getting away with it, and it's being covered up at the highest echelons of our government, that's a frightening thing to contemplate, isn't it, Joel?
Now, here's the real evidence, though, that I'm going to give. A lot of people will be skeptical and say, well, these are just Europeans, these are Arabs, they have a reason to lie to us. But here's a report that finally came out of the U.S. Army after they discharged 3 soldiers for abusing prisoners. And these are the U.S. records. Master Sergeant Lisa Marie Gearman, a woman, 35 years old, knocked a prisoner to the ground, repeatedly kicked him in the groin, abdomen, and head, and encouraged her subordinate soldiers to do the same. She was given an other-than-honorable discharge from her immediate commander. She's a thug. She should do jail time. She got off scot-free nearly. Staff Sergeant Scott McKenzie was guilty of kicking prisoners on his head and shoulders, encouraging others to kick them in the groin. He kicked him in the abdomen and the head. He threw the detainee face down on the ground and stepped on his previously injured arms. He was given a general discharge under honorable conditions. What's honorable about this conduct? I mean, can you see the point I'm talking about? Here is Americans admitting to their soldiers doing these things and giving them just token slaps on the hands as they remove them from the military.
Well, we like to think that we're always the good guys. I believe America is a great country, but I believe there are forces of evil here. And until we address that, we will continue losing in this battle.
Now, the point I'm making, though, Stan, is that these obviously represent very few of our soldiers, but there is a climate of permissiveness among the higher officers about this conduct, and that's why it keeps going.
Well, we're out of time. It's always a pleasure. Thanks very much for being with us. And, Joel, we'll look forward to having you with us again next week.
Thank you.
Good night, and God bless. And this is Dr. Stan. Let's face the issues that we have. Let's understand that there is a force of evil in this world. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Pray for America. Till Monday, may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Mr. James Hamill. We're going to be talking about the effort to make it very difficult for or impossible for you to get vitamins and minerals and herbal supplements, so many of the things that really have improved the health of people across America. And James is certainly very knowledgeable of what's going on, not only at our level here in the United States, but as far as the European Parliament is concerned. So without further ado, James, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. My name is John.
John Hamill. And, John, why don't you give us a little background about yourself and what you're doing and why you're involved in this battle to try to have it so that people will be able to go to the health food stores and buy the products they want.
I'm the president of International Advocates for Health Freedom, a consulting firm to the dietary supplement industry on legislative issues, and I've been lobbying for health freedom since 1989. I got involved with this battle out of a personal need to have access to dietary supplements which saved my life over 20 years ago through a suppressed alternative treatment mode. And what I'm trying to call the public's attention to right now is a full court press, which the pharmaceutical industry has started driving against the dietary supplement industry in an effort to railroad consumer access to dietary supplements globally. And what they have designed is a very gradual, very incremental takeover designed to be so slow that most people don't even notice it and so don't realize there's a need to do anything to fight back.
All right, and so what do they intend to do? And first of all, is this simply a matter of doing away with the competition so people will have to go to the drug companies and pay much more for some of the same products?
No, it's a lot worse than that. It's a population control agenda. It's an effort to cull our numbers. It isn't just an effort to take control of the supplement industry. It's an effort to totally destroy it as unwanted competition.
All right. So now, how are they going to go about this? How will they carry out this incremental plan that you're describing?
Okay, the first thing I should say is that the average American has no comprehension of the implications of our joining the World Trade Organization. And what I need to explain about that is that there is a new international court called the Dispute Settlement Body of the World Trade Organization, which is a rigged court. It's a Mickey Mouse court that doesn't follow our rules of evidence. Every decision they have made has gone against the environment, against the public health, against human rights, against labor rights, against all the different intangibles that go into the makeup of any democratic nation's laws. What this entity is doing is imposing trade sanctions on countries that don't harmonize their domestic laws to international standards. And in this case, we're concerned about the rapid development of an international standard for vitamins and minerals, which is being developed at the UN's Codex Alimentarius Commission. This process is being impacted heavily by events in the European Union. The European Union wields the most power at the UN's Codex Alimentarius Commission because there are 15 countries in the European Union, and at next year's Codex meeting, they'll have 25 countries in the European Union, which has recently driven through a very draconian vitamin standard.
In what way is it draconian?
It would severely limit consumer access to high-potency vitamins. It would ban over 300 bioavailable nutrient forms currently present in over 5,000 safe vitamin and mineral products. That includes a large number of the safest, most readily absorbed, and most effective food-derived forms. This list of banned items includes mixed tocopherol, that is natural vitamin E, carotenoids, and methylcobalamin, which is vitamin B12, all forms of sulfur, boron, vanadium, silicon, and most trace elements, the most readily absorbed and safest forms of calcium, magnesium, zinc, selenium, chromium, and molybdenum. This is a direct attack on the dietary supplement industry, and it isn't just happening in the European Union, it's happening globally right now.
All right, now, what is their justification? In other words, do they have some rationale behind this, or is it they put up an excuse, but the real thing is we're going to do away with the competition and we're going to use the power of government to do it?
Well, what they're saying is that they need to have one set of laws globally to govern the sale of these products in order to streamline sales so that manufacturers won't have to change product labels throughout all the different countries where they're trying to sell product. In other words, they want one-stop shopping, one set of laws to govern everybody. And ostensibly, they're creating these international standards to protect consumers. But since the process creating these standards is driven by multinational drug companies, consumers and people who are objectively looking at the health benefits of these products are being effectively shut out of the equation. They're being shut out of the decision-making process. So we're seeing a naked effort to railroad us here.
Well, you mean, would you be able still to buy, you know, high-potency vitamins once this legislation is enacted at the international level and then forced upon the United States through the World Trade Organization?
Well, okay, once a Codex Vitamin, if a Codex Vitamin standard were to be driven through the way they're hoping, the way they have planned, for a while there would be a global black market, because for some time you would still be able to get these products. You'd have people in Europe making trips to the United States to fill their suitcases and return to England and Europe, and there would be a black market for a period. But what they plan on doing is isolating the United States from the world and taking us last through this process of harmonization. I've been tracking this since 1996, when I wrote the first article in the world to call the public's attention to the Codex International Threat to Health Freedom. That article was published in Life Extension magazine, and I've been trying very hard to awaken the American dietary supplement industry especially to this threat. And my biggest opponents in waking people up have been the pharmaceutically dominated vitamin trade associations. All the vitamin trade associations in the United States are being controlled by pharmaceutical interests from the top down, who are keeping the health food stores and the vitamin companies in the dark. So people are being misled. They're not being shown what's going on. The wool has been pulled over their eyes. And it's a frightening thing, because we have 1 month's time right now to generate donations for an all-important lawsuit that could turn things around in our favor.
All right, and so what is this lawsuit, and who's actually behind the lawsuit?
Okay, the lawsuit has been filed by a group in England called the Alliance for Natural Health, which is a pan-European health freedom organization, which is attempting to overturn the European Union Food Supplement Directive. This Food Supplement Directive has huge global implications, and here is how. At the next meeting of the UN's Codex Alimentarius Commission, the European Union will have full status. Up until now, they've only had observer status. But at the next meeting, they'll not only have full status, but they'll be expanding from 15 countries in the European Union to 25. That's a lot of power going to be vested in the European Union's delegate, who is a guy named Basil Mitsotakis. Basil Mitsotakis is the person who drafted the EU Food Supplement Directive. Increasingly, the vitamin standard at Codex, the language for this vitamin standard, is looking more and more like this EU Food Supplement Directive. So if we don't overturn the Food Supplement Directive in court, the writing is on the wall for this industry worldwide.
Well, now, of course, here in the United States, they've tried to limit our access to vitamins and minerals in the past, and there's been such an outcry from the public that they backed away from it. My understanding is that, you know, it was one of the greatest responses from the public that they've ever seen, and the legislators just ran for cover and dropped the hot potato. Are you suggesting then that they're going to try to impose this internationally, and then once it's the law of the world, we won't be able to do anything about it?
What I'm saying is that people don't understand the implications of our having joined the World Trade Organization. The World Trade Organization has the ability to twist a country's arm. They can't directly force a country to modify their laws to conform to an international standard. But by threatening enormous trade sanctions against broad sectors of a nation's economy, they can generate intense pressure on Congress to repeal any of our laws that they don't like.
In other words, they can force our Congress to do what they don't want to do, but simply by threats of international sanctions. So what you're saying is we're losing our national sovereignty, we're losing our freedom as a nation.
Well, that's a whole other story entirely, because I'm a person who believes we've never truly, in fact, had any national sovereignty to begin with. I'm of the belief that that's always been an illusion, but that's way too broad a topic to get into here.
All right, fine. So when will this lawsuit be filed? You say it's going to be filed in about a month?
It's been filed. We got it filed by a deadline, but we'll be in court for oral arguments at the end of January.
Now, are you involved with this lawsuit then?
I've been involved in generating donations to help the Alliance for Natural Health be able to go forward with the lawsuit. I've gone to England and worked directly with them, and I had an article published in the July issue of Life Extension magazine, which tells all about this lawsuit, and that article can be seen on the Life Extension Foundation's website and also on my own website, which is IAHF.com.
That's IAHF.com.
Right. If people go to that website and look under emergency alert, they can read all about this. What we have to do here is awaken the grassroots. People ask me all the time why the vitamin industry isn't behind this lawsuit, and the reason is because their trade associations are being controlled from the top down by pharmaceutical interests who are doing spin against our message, and they've been able to keep the vitamin companies from supporting this lawsuit. We're up against PR professionals who are very highly skilled. They can make you believe anything. It's frightening. For example, the Council for Responsible Nutrition is a large and very powerful vitamin trade association that includes amongst its membership Bayer, BASF, Wyeth, Pfizer, Monsanto, and numerous other drug companies. There are a number of network marketing vitamin companies that also belong to CRN, including Manatech, GNLD, several others. At any rate, what CRN has put out as spin that's been effectively used to keep some of these vitamin companies in CRN from contributing to the NIH lawsuit is CRN is saying that our side has won a victory at the most recent Codex meeting. They're very skillfully lying to people. They're using a technique of manipulation called the Hegelian dialectic, where first they create the problem, that is the threat of regulation to RDA levels for potency. That triggers a desired public reaction, which is fear of regulation to RDA levels. They then, under that climate of fear, they then usher in a supposed solution, which they are calling scientific risk assessment, as a means of generating potency levels to what they call safe upper levels, which are supposedly scientifically derived. The thing is, these so-called safe upper levels aren't scientific at all, and they're not much better than RDAs. And so it's a big con game. But what happens is when a company has invested a small fortune in joining a trade association like CRN, the top brass who made that decision to join get their egos invested in the fact that they're a member. And so it's really hard for them to go against the policies of the trade association. And the people that are distributors in these network marketing companies, such as Manatech, are busy running their little businesses, and they just take it at face value that they're being given good advice by their trade association, so they don't look closely at what's actually going on, and they don't realize how they're being set up. It's insidious.
Well, I'm certainly it is. I saw this in organized medicine when the reason we're in the trouble we are today is the leaders of organized medicine sold out the doctors, but then why would anybody want to be a leader of organized medicine? Yes, there are a few people there who are there for the right reasons, but the real power structure, at least in the California Medical Association when I was there, was in the hands of people who said one thing but had a different agenda, and the real agenda was the control of the doctors, not freedom for the doctors. So it sounds like they've done the same thing with, I know they've done it with the nurses, sounds like they've done the same thing then with the vitamin companies across America.
Well, they have. And, you know, interestingly enough, just today, the Bush administration announced their intention to ban ephedra products. And they've announced that this ban is going to go into effect in 60 days, but they wanted to announce it now to just try to discourage people making New Year's resolutions from using ephedra products, which they are claiming are killer products that you must avoid at all costs. Well,
do we have any idea how many people have died? They're talking about large numbers of people. That we just found another 70 who died. This supposedly just in the last few weeks or so. There haven't been that many deaths from ephedra, have there?
No. What's happening here is there's a lot of things that are distorting what's happening here. There have been instances where people have died from heat stroke, and their death has been wrongly blamed on ephedra. There have been people who have taken ephedra, but who have also taken prescription drugs, where their death is actually been caused by one or more prescription drugs, but it's being blamed on ephedra. There are a lot of things going on here. Ephedra can unquestionably be dangerous when not used according to label directions. There are certainly some people who should not use ephedra. But there's a double standard being employed here, because pseudoephedrine is found in a whole host of over-the-counter cold preparations, and there is objective data to indicate clearly that there have been far more deaths and injuries caused by pseudoephedrine than were ever caused by Ma Wang or ephedra. And it is outrageous that they would make this big stink about ephedra while leaving a far more dangerous related substance on the market. But they'll never pull pseudoephedrine because it's being marketed by all the large multinational drug companies.
In other words, they're going to leave something that's exactly the same on the market, and this is just a way of getting rid of the competition?
Well, it's not exactly the same. Ephedra is not the same as pseudoephedrine. It's much safer.
You're saying ephedra is much safer.
Ephedra is much safer than pseudoephedrine. Ephedra contains some pseudoephedrine, but the thing is, this is just protection racket for drug companies that manufacture weight loss drugs. There's an epidemic of obesity in this country. They should be looking at the 800 or 900 people a day who die from heart attacks caused by obesity.
Well, they're going to leave the other wheat production products on the market with ephedrine in them, or ephedrine-like products, do you know?
Well, there's a whole host of over-the-counter cold preparations that any six-year-old tall enough to reach the checkout counter in the supermarket can buy.
Now hold that thought for just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is the Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this evening is with us, Mr. Hamill. He's talking about what's happening as far as effort to really use the power of government to restrict access to certain drugs. And we were talking just a moment ago about the fact they're going to take ephedra off the market, which apparently is a herbal product, and yet very, very similar products will certainly be left on the market. And what you were suggesting was that any child that could reach up and buy the proprietary substances, I would be able to use that for weight reduction. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, they'd use them for whatever they're marketed for. You know, mostly these are cold preparations that have pseudoephedrine in them.
It's exactly the same product, though, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's somewhat different. Ephedra and pseudoephedrine are not exactly the same.
They don't work the same physiologically, then.
Well, yeah, they do. But ephedra contains small amounts of pseudoephedrine. Pseudoephedrine itself is totally synthesized. In other words, the herb Ma Wang contains trace amounts of pseudoephedrine, but pseudoephedrine is a synthesized substance, which is far more dangerous than Ma Wong.
And what you're suggesting then is that they're going to leave a more dangerous product on the market and take a safer one off?
That's right, yeah. And of course, the weight loss drugs that are on the market are far more dangerous than Ephedra is. But they're going to leave them on. There was a really good documentary on public broadcasting system called, I believe it was called Dangerous Prescription. And people should go on the website of the public broadcasting system to watch that. It shows how drugs are fraudulently approved in the United States. It shows how people at the FDA who would like to keep unsafe drugs off the market are overruled by corrupt superiors.
Well, it's even more interesting. There was an article in the Los Angeles Times just yesterday about the National Institute of Health and how so many of the doctors employed at the National Institute of Health who, check out, various types of treatments and medications are actually also as consultants for the drug companies that they are supposedly regulating.
That's exactly right.
And some people have pointed out, isn't that a conflict of interest? And so the head of the NIH has said, gee, we're going to have to look into this. Yes, these fellows are all getting paid by the drug companies that they're writing articles about, saying how wonderful the drugs are. And some people might be suspicious and think that the fact that we're getting large sums of money might influence their ultimate conclusions. And I can tell you it does. And this is the great tragedy we have today, because we really have a society that has no moral conscience at all. We've done away with the Ten Commandments, right and wrong. Really, the fellow who ends up with the most toys wins. If you are a big enough crook, why, you're not going to go to jail. And you're not going to see the really big people in the stock market who are cheating out of countless billions of dollars. They're not going to be punished. Few of the other people will be. And I'm sure this goes over to the drugs as well. And really, where the big problem is the government regulation. If you could trust the government to do the right thing, but then, of course, if men were angels, we wouldn't need government at all, would we?
No, that's right.
All right. Well, we're going to have to, just a moment, we're going to bring back our listeners up there in the Great Northwest. And then we'll want to, of course, continue on with this discussion. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, now, of course, we try to keep abreast pretty much of what's going on, and I haven't heard at all about this legislation or these laws rules that are being enacted over in Europe. Now, this committee then will actually be setting up the standards for vitamins for the European Union. How will that influence us? Is this a World Trade Organization panel or what?
Okay, well, what we're seeing here is the United States Codex Alimentarius Commission developing a standard for vitamins and minerals that they will undoubtedly later expand on once they can get the bare bones framework in place. So we're seeing this very incremental process where they're boiling the frog slowly. They don't want to trigger a public backlash. They don't want anybody to fight back. They're moving with intentional slowness. And they're making skillful use of controlled opposition groups to try to marginalize anybody like me who's able to connect the dots and explain to others what is going on and how to fight back. So what's happening is we're seeing dominoes falling here. The European Union has enacted legislation called the Food Supplements Directive, which I've already described. Next, they're attempting to also enact something called the Traditional Herbal Medicinal Products Directive, which would ban the sale of a huge number of safe herbs under false pretenses. And then the worst one of all of these directives is called the Pharmaceuticals Directive. The Pharmaceuticals Directive would regard any substance with any physiologic effect in the body as a drug. It would trump anything that can squeak through the first two directives. It is outrageous. And so we're not going to have a chance to kill these other two directives unless we can first overturn the Food Supplements Directive in court, which we're going to be trying to do at the end of January.
Well, now, but is this an American or is this a European entity?
What I'm trying to explain is the European Union wields more power than any other entity at the UN's Codex Alimentarius Commission's Committee on Nutrition, which is developing a standard for vitamins and minerals. The United States is participating in this UN Codex Committee on Nutrition. And so this standard for vitamins and minerals that's under development by the UN will become international law. And every country on earth has to harmonize its domestic laws to it, or they'll face trade sanctions. The only legal means by which a country can refuse to harmonize its domestic law to an international standard is on a basis of safety. Now, if a trade dispute against us were going to be argued in a U.S. court using our rules as evidence, we would have no problem justifying our domestic laws on a basis of safety. The problem is a trade dispute against us would not be heard in a U.S. court. It would be heard in a new international court called the Dispute Settlement Body. The Dispute Settlement Body is a kangaroo court, a Mickey Mouse court that is rigged. It is rigged in favor of the multinational corporate interests that are trying to make an end run around any national law that interferes with their profits. And every decision they have made has gone against the environment, against the public health, against human rights, against labor rights, against all the intangibles that go into the makeup of any democratic nation's laws. It's because of this that we had the Battle of Seattle in 1999, where stormtroopers faced off against demonstrators in the street. I was there. I saw what happened. It was outrageous. People better wake up. We are at war against the New World Order right now. They have the ability to block your access to every dietary supplement you use. They're doing it in Europe right now. As goes the European Union, so goes the world. They're trying to form a carbon copy of the European Union in our hemisphere called the Free Trade Area of the Americas. Their intention is to harmonize the laws between Canada, the U.S., Mexico, Central and South America, just like they're doing in the European Union right now.
Well, there's no question at all that there is a move towards a new world order, a new world religion, and the loss of all freedom, because, of course, it's difficult enough to do anything about our laws here at the state and local level, but as you get to the national level, it's increasingly hard. Once you get to the international level, forget it. The bureaucracy will determine what is going to happen, and you really want them to have the life and death decision as to what medicines you're going to take. Would you really want them to have the life and death decision as whether you could have access to herbs and minerals and vitamins and things of that sort, which really have, I think, helped many, many people as far as their general health is concerned? We're going to be back here in just a moment. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Hamill. We're talking about really what's happening as far as this Codex Alimentarius. How do you call it?
It's the Codex Alimentarius Commission.
Alimentarius Commission over in Europe. And now, first, how soon do you think that they will have these restrictions laid out or this plan laid out?
Okay, a year from this past October, they'll be meeting again in Bonn, Germany, and they've pushed the vitamin standard from step 3 to step 5. They could finalize it at next year's meeting if they get a consensus. They can finalize the standard at step 6. Normally, they go to step 8, but if they get a consensus, they can finalize it sooner. So they could finalize it at next year's meeting. Our only chance to monkey wrench what they're trying to do is to overturn the food supplement directive in court. Now, we do have a good chance to do that. We have the best law firm in the European Union in our corner. We have an excellent organization that's been putting a lawsuit together with that law firm. I have full confidence in these people's abilities. They're bringing some really good expert witnesses into court with them. We need money for this lawsuit. It's very expensive.
All right. Well, how can people, of course, then contribute?
People can contribute by going to the website of the Alliance for Natural Health. That website is www.alliance-natural-health.org. It's www.alliance-natural-health.org, and people can make donations on that website.
All right, fine. And so we'll want to get that address out one more time a little later in the program so that our listeners up in the Great Northwest can get that as well. So this is going to be quite an expensive proposition, but you do have good legal representation, and you anticipate then that this case will be heard. When would the case actually be heard? And would it be heard in a European court, a European parliament, or where?
Okay, for starters, it will be heard in a British court on January 30th. And if we win there, then we win the right to go on to the European Court of Justice at The Hague. That's the European Union's Supreme Court.
All right, so you'll know in fairly short order then whether or not you're going to be able to get this thing heard at the European Union's Supreme Court. Is that right?
That's correct. I might add that last summer...
Now hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest John Hamill. We're talking about the lawsuit that they're trying to bring in Great Britain and then hopefully take it to the European Parliament Court to try to block this whole ridiculous program to set up worldwide standards which will, if carried through, will eventually limit your ability to get vitamins and minerals and herbal products, because of course the people with the big bucks who run our drug companies, who've run the prices up here. I mean, we sell drugs in the United States up three times of what the drug company will sell exactly the same drug for in Canada. In fact, that's so funny. I've gotten calls from Canadian physicians saying, "You Americans, you know, you shouldn't be importing the cheaper drugs from Canada. Why you should be, paying for it here in the United States." And I say, why should we subsidize your failing health care program up there? Why should we have to pay full price when you're getting it at a much less price up there, and then even rationing which drugs the people can get, because you've got a socialized medical system up there, which the longer it goes, of course, the longer the delays are in getting treatment. Why should America be subsidizing the whole world and, of course, making the massive profits for the drug companies? I have nothing against profits, but everybody taking advantage of the system. We don't have competition. We have cartels. And it's about time people begin to understand that a cartel is simply a gigantic monopoly of people who have one intention, and that is, of course, to take advantage of the population. And this is what we've allowed to happen in the United States from lack, of course, of any effective government supervision at all.
Yeah,
and of course, then they use the government to prevent competition. And this is the thing. You could never have the cartels if you had competition. The government or the drug companies use the power of government to limit opposition. And then, of course, they establish their cartel. I believe in a free market system and free competition, not what we have at the present time.
I totally agree with that. I might add that I had a meeting with a well-known libertarian in Washington State, a very famous alternative medical practitioner named Jonathan Wright, who has a clinic down near Seattle. I met with Jonathan Wright for 2 hours last summer to awaken him to this codex threat and tell him about the Alliance for Natural Health lawsuit. And he put an alert out through his newsletter urging his readers to support this lawsuit. I imagine some of your listeners are in Washington State and probably heard of Dr. Wright. He was subject to an FDA raid back in the early 90s that got a lot of publicity. It was one of the triggering incidents that caused people to rally to pass the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. What people need to realize is that none of our domestic laws is safe in the face of international harmonization. Any of our domestic laws can be overturned.
All right, well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment on this, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And it really appears that the very powerful forces here in America are intent upon, by one means or another, limiting the ability of the people to get the dietary supplements, which have really kept many, many people far healthier than the traditional medicines which are put out by the drug companies, overpriced and many times really extremely harmful. In other words, there are more people who die, you know, every year from gastrointestinal bleeds from taking the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, the Motrins and the Aleve and all of these various products. They never tell you about that, but I don't know, 30, 40,000 people die every year from those. But of course, we certainly would far rather have people taking those things than the very safe and efficient things that many times you can buy in a health food store.
That's exactly right. And then they'll go to great lengths through all kinds of PR spin to demonize these safe products through all kinds of exaggeration and distortions of the truth. And it goes out over the AP wire service, out over Reuters wire service. It gets put on the front page of the newspaper, beat into people's consciousness through the evening news, and people will believe anything.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, I'll never forget, one of the big drug companies that made an antidepressant financed a study of St. John's wort, which, is, of course, is a natural herbal product. And they came up and they said, oh, terrible, terrible product. You shouldn't be using this. It's got, you know, all these terrible complications. This study is financed by the drug company. Do you honestly believe that they're going to tell you the truth about a product that costs a quarter or a fraction of what their product costs? No, they'd far rather you bought the extremely expensive product and didn't use the simple, efficient one, the effective one.
That's right, and one of their ways of trying to demonize these safe products is to claim that they have bad reactions with various pharmaceutical drugs, and because there sometimes is a reaction when they combine them with a pharmaceutical, they use that as the excuse to ban the safe dietary supplement. And right now there's legislation in the works. It's the Dietary Supplement Safety Act of 2003. It's S-722, Senator Durbin's bill in the Senate, and in the House it's H.R. 3377. This is terrible legislation. It's not necessary at all.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that, because I agree with you. And this is being pushed by Congressman Henry Waxman here, I know, as one of the congressmen. And, of course, Will Rogers always used to say he never met a man he didn't like. But I always used to say, well, he never met Henry Waxman then. I know because I testified before his committee, one of the most rudest, insolent men I've ever met.
Well, I would agree with you. I once worked on a congressional campaign in California to try to drive Henry Waxman out of office. And our candidate had a debate against Henry in Henry's synagogue in Bel Air. And after the debate, which Henry lost because he didn't even bother to prepare for it, you know, so arrogant was he that he'd get handily reelected, he stood up by the stage to answer people's questions. So a lot of people got in line to come up to ask him a question, I included. After a half an hour, I finally made it up to him, and at that time he was pushing legislation that would give FDA agents the right to carry guns, and it would have given the FDA a quantum increase in regulatory power, the right to use wiretaps indiscriminately and all kinds of things. So I said to him, I said, Congressman, why do you want to give more power to a federal agency that abuses its power? And rather than answer my question, he turned his back to me and proceeded to walk to the far corner of the room as fast as he could walk without answering my question. Well, I didn't like that a whole lot. I had a tape recorder switched on to record when I asked this question, and I followed him with my tape recorder outstretched, repeating my question loud enough for everyone in that synagogue to hear. Two bodyguards, who were at least 7 feet tall, got between Waxman and I and let their coats hang open so I could see the guns in the shoulder holsters as they told me to cool it. Well, when I left that synagogue parking lot, I got followed. I had to use evasive tactics out on the road so they couldn't see where I lived.
So what else is new? Obviously, you touched a nerve at Henry Waxman. I have very, very little respect for this man, who, of course, is on the wrong side on almost every issue. I don't care if he's a Republican or Democrat, but he certainly seems to be in the pocket of very, very powerful people, especially in the drug industry and the FDA. And we know there's a revolving door between the FDA and the drug companies. The Federal Drug Administration, if you do a good job when you're working there, why, then you get a nice, fat job when you leave, or then you get a job working for a think tank that's financed by the drug companies. This is what's wrong when you let the federal government regulate drugs. Yes, it would be very, very difficult for every state to have to regulate drugs, but I'd far rather we did that than we gave all the power to the centralized government. Because, of course, if you have 48 different or 50 different states, why you have to have people going into every one of those states to bribe people? When all the power is in Washington, D.C., you just have to bribe one small group of people. So it's much more difficult to control things and come up with the wrong conclusions when you've got 50 different states. And that was the beauty of our federal system and limiting the power of the federal government. And, of course, anybody who's read the Constitution notes that the federal government has no right to regulate drugs or anything else. Almost everything being done by the current administration, but by the past administration as well, is in violation of the Constitution of the United States. It's such a shame that the American people don't know enough about the Constitution to be able to debate the issue or have the courage to speak out. But then, of course, when people lose courage, they lose their freedom as well. Well, certainly you feel that you have a pretty good opportunity to get this legislation enacted, to get the legislation blocked with this lawsuit. What's the outlook generally?
Well, the lawyer that's handling the case has made over 70 appearances before the European Court of Justice. He is ranked as the number one attorney in the European Union by his peers. He is an excellent attorney with a really good law firm. They've done their homework. They've put a very solid case together. I might add that this European Union Food Supplement Directive is the weak spot on the cartel's wall. It's a soft spot. They almost didn't get the thing passed in the European Parliament. We almost killed it. I believe it can be overturned in court, or I wouldn't be trying so hard to help the Alliance for Natural Health get the donations they need to sustain this lawsuit. Once again, I would strongly encourage your listeners to visit the website of the Alliance for Natural Health at www.alliance-natural-health.org and read what they have to say about this lawsuit. It really is important for people to donate to it. We really can stop this global juggernaut, but you can't do it on U.S. soil. For 5 years, I pushed for an oversight hearing on the Codex Vitamin issue after observing Dr. Beth Yetley of the FDA violate the law at these meetings in Germany when I was on the U.S. delegation. This oversight hearing got whitewashed on March 20th, 2001. The truth did not get told. I wasn't allowed to testify. None of my witnesses were allowed to testify. The only person allowed to testify on this issue lied under oath. The truth did not come out. This country has been set up to lose in a WTO trade dispute. The only way we can stop what's happening from continuing to unfold the way it is by working with our international allies.
Well, now, what about this legislation, this Senate Bill 722, H.R. 3377? Shouldn't we try to block that as well?
Well, of course we should.
No. Then how can could you tell our listeners about that legislation? Because this is really another one of these examples of terrible legislation, sort of stealth legislation that they don't want the American people to know about. They'll slip it through in the middle of the night sometime with half a dozen people there still on the floor of the Senate or the House.
Well, the Dietary Supplement Safety Act of 2003 is sponsored by Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois. which is where the headquarters of the AMA is. It's a huge pharmaceutical state. I have been to hearings where I've watched Dick Durbin speak. He is he's a guy who is just absolutely evil. He doesn't care about the health of the American people. He's totally disingenuous in saying that we need this legislation. We don't need the public to be protected from safe dietary supplements. We need the public protected from unsafe pharmaceutical drugs that are fraudulently approved by a corrupt FDA. And they're going to try to use this instance with Ephedra as the excuse to push this bad legislation. It is important that your listeners call their senators and congressmen in opposition to S-722 in the Senate and H.R. 3377 in the House.
That's the Dietary Supplement Safety Act, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And what this legislation would do is it would impose a huge amount of red tape on dietary supplement manufacturers that would just drive the cost of these products up unnecessarily. It would drive a lot of small manufacturers out of business. It would require them to collect adverse reaction reports and to furnish the government with this information, even when there's no evidence that it was a dietary supplement per se that actually caused the adverse reaction. Like, there could be an instance where somebody takes a dietary supplement along with, you know, say five or six different pharmaceutical prescription drugs, and there's an adverse reaction to something here. It might not be the dietary supplement at all, but it's going to get blamed. In other words, it's a witch hunt.
Well, you know, it's amazing as I look back on my years in medicine. When I practiced at a community hospital in Santa Cruz, we had about a 50-bed hospital, and we had about three people working in the office, in other words, doing paperwork. Today, after, 40 years of government, it said that you have to do one half hour of paperwork for every hour that the patient is in the hospital, and he's in the hospital 24 hours a day. So you're talking about 12 hours of paperwork for every patient every day. Thanks to our government and the bureaucrats and their requirement for all the paperwork, there was a time, 40 years ago, when I first got started practicing medicine, patients could get a back rub. When they got there every evening, they had aides on the ward. They had plenty of help, and it was inexpensive. And the price of a hospital room was about $50 a day. Now it's several thousand dollars a day, and your chance of getting a back rub is about the same as you're winning the lottery, when it's up about $60 or $80 million. There just is no chance at all. The quality of care has gone down, and the amount of paperwork has gone up. There's no problem facing America today that a new series of laws won't make worse.
That's exactly right. Well put.
All right. Well, our telephone number, if you have a question or comment, we've got about 10 minutes before we have to let John go. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, freedom is under attack at all times. And there are people out there. If they can control your access to these dietary supplements, they can prevent you from keeping your health. And I honestly believe that these do help you. Everybody should be taking vitamins and minerals. And there are lots of other things out there that really do help. And they've been used throughout the world for many years. The health food stores are doing a great job. And the drug companies don't like the competition. That's what it's really all about. And I will tell you that some of their drugs are terribly, terribly dangerous. And yet you never hear anybody saying, we've got to take these drugs off the market because, of course, they're killing people. People are getting strokes. They're giving them high blood pressure medicines. Totally unnecessary in many instances. And the people are getting strokes from it. Well, I mean, after all, they take blood pressure medicine to bring the pressure down, and so they get a stroke. That's one of the dangers, because we're giving them, of course, the high blood pressure medicine to keep them from getting strokes. And yet we many times create the very problems we're concerned about. Let's go to Ed, who's calling in from Aptos. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good. I have a question. I wanted to ask your guest. I heard you mention Aleve. I take Naproxen for back pain. I was wondering if he had any suggestions. Is Naproxen known to be bad?
I can't comment on that. I'll tell you,
all of these are non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications, and if you take too many of them, you can get into trouble with bleeding in the colon or upper intestinal bleeding. It depends on how much you take. You take them regularly with food. How much are you taking every day, Ed?
Thank you, sir.
Okay. And, I tell you, I've been taking Motrin for some time because of my hip. And I'll tell you, I couldn't get by without it. But, you know, there is a danger inherent in any of the things that you take, and especially the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. You just have to be always careful to take them with food, and you have to just be very, very careful. You start getting a bleed while you're back away from it. So we'll be, of course, getting fortunately some people calling in right now. And looks like we've got Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Where are you calling from?
Good evening. I'm calling from a little town called Post Falls, Idaho.
Oh,
it's about 20 miles east of Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
We're right on the border.
Good to have you with us, Kathy. Do you have a question or comment?
Thank you. Well, thank you for this program. This is the first I'd heard about an international effort. I was just concerned about the two bills, the Senate and the House of Representatives bills, but now I see this problem is much deeper, and as you said, it's much more insidious.
Freedom is under attack from all sides. This is the tragedy.
Oh. Well, I see that there's a large possibility that the days are numbered for wanting to, you know, get some of the supplements that I get to ward off tumor and cancer. I've studied herbs since 1975 when my first husband died of cancer, and I didn't know a thing.
Well,
I started reading. I started reading, and I found out so very much.
We're going to actually, on Monday, Kathy, we're going to have Bill Sardi is going to be on. He's going to be talking about resveratrol, which is the most amazing food supplement, and you won't want to miss that program next Monday evening with Bill.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll tune in.
Okay,
yes. Well, my question is, lacking a computer, this Alliance for Natural Health, I'd like to make some kind of a donation, even if it's very small. How could I write to them or send something to them in the mail? Is there an address?
Okay, let me see. If I can get on the web right now, I can give you an address.
Thank you.
Okay.
I mean, I could go to the library, but I work such strange hours that usually the library is closed. I'm a caregiver, so I can't have ready access to a computer.
Okay. Well, just bear with me for a second, and I'll...
Sure.
I will try to...
And by the way, thank you so much for what you're doing. God bless you, and thank you, and I hope you'll be protected and strengthened.
I tell you what, if you call me separately at 800-333-2553, I'll get an address for you. I don't have it at my fingertips.
Did you get that
number?
Okay.
Yes, I got 800-333-2553.
I'm having a problem with my computer right now. Something's wrong with my mouse, and I'm having trouble
Please tell me your last name again, John.
It's Hamill, H-A-M-M-E-L-L.
All right.
Thanks, Kathy, and thanks for calling.
Thank you, and God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye. Let's go to David calling from Corona. Hi, where's Corona?
Right by Riverside, California.
Okay, good to have you with us, David.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a comment. You know, these pharmaceutical companies, I think they're behind these things, and I think they see that supplementation has been so effective in helping the people who have, like, chronic illnesses and stuff like that. Not to say that any of their stuff helps out, but some people are getting help without even using the pharmaceuticals, and I think they're getting very upset about it, and the word is just spreading around, and it's just dipping into their profits. And I happen to be one of those people. I mean, I don't have to take my asthma medication or anything like that because I'm using herbs and vitamins to take care of the problems that the pharmaceutical I would have to take otherwise.
Well, I agree with you totally, David. And I think that you need to help us reach the public and let them understand what's really going on. Have you called before here at our state programs?
I call every once in a while whenever my internet, I'm listening to the internet, whenever it's working.
Okay, fine. Well, it's good to have you with us. Thank you so very much, and just help us get the word out.
I have an address here now.
Okay, go ahead and put that out.
Okay, it's the Alliance for Natural Health, Mount Manor House, 16 The Mount, T-H-E-M-O-U-N-T.
16 The Mount.
Yeah, Guildford, G-U-I-L-D-F-O-R-D, Surrey, S-U-R-R-E-Y, postal code GU2-4HF, United Kingdom, and it must be an international money order or they can't deposit it.
All right, that's one advantage, of course, of going and doing it on the Internet. You don't have to worry about those things.
Right, if you go on their website, you can just make a donation with your debit or credit card. That's www.alliance-natural-health.org.
Okay, David, anything else you want to say?
All right. Well, I just wanted to say I appreciate what you're doing, Dr. Stan, and all the different guests that you have on here. You know, I have a lot of the favorite people. There's a lot of good people that you have, and you have them on your archives, too. You're right. We do need to band together and spread the word out on what's really happening and how they try to force all these dangerous vaccines on our children. And I think that supplementation, nutraceuticals, they need to, I mean, the word needs to spread around that we can get lots of help from these vitamins and minerals and herbs. And God bless you guys and hang in there.
God bless you, too. Thanks so much, David. And another example of what, well, one of the things that they did was something called L-tryptophan. L-tryptophan is an amino acid. It's very effective in putting people to sleep. And we used to tell people when I was practicing medicine, take a couple of L-tryptophan. You're having difficulty going to sleep. Don't buy all these other expensive things. You know, of the expensive pills you need a prescription for, just take a couple of L-tryptophan and you'll be just fine. Well, then, of course, some factory over in Japan was turning this out. They put out a bad batch, and people got an eosinophilic myositis, and there were a couple of people who died, and some people had some serious reactions. So they outlawed L-tryptophan, but instead of cleaning up this one factory, and that would have been the end of it, they outlawed it so you couldn't buy it any place in the world, and today you can't buy L-tryptophan in America, even though it's perfectly safe. You can buy it for animals. You can't buy it for human beings. Why? This was a competition to their sleeping pills that were making so much money over. And the first they said, well, there was a complication. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it was intentional. But because one factory turned out a bad product one time, you can't buy it anywhere in the United States. Something's wrong with this picture. John, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yeah, anyone wanting to be on my email distribution list can by going to IAHF.com.
IAHF.com. Okay, well, thank you so very much. It's been a real pleasure. I appreciate you being with us. And please keep in touch with me if something else comes up on this, or I would love to get you onto some of our other programs.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, and this is, of course, John Hamill, and he's been our special guest this evening. I hope you've enjoyed the program. And, of course, this is the time I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And as you know, we're on the radio 5 hours every day, and it's an expensive proposition to buy time. And, of course, we have 35 stations that hear our weekend program. We'd love to expand even further, but we can't do it responsibly without having the money pledged. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or know more about our ministry, our number, 1-800-544-8922.